Right? Right? Okay, so what have we learned? Well, we've learned one thing, I think, which is really important that we've learned, is that everybody uses all of these kinds of words in very different ways. And this is, you know, we're just having a sort of nice little chat about these things. But the same thing definitely applies when listening to different meditation teachers, different teachings, different backgrounds, and so on. And which one is the correct way to use mindfulness? And the correct, obviously, there isn't one. They're just words. They don't have correct meanings. They just are ways of trying to convey a meaning from one person to another. So just remember that when you're encountering different meditation teachings, practitioners, teachers, and so on, they will use language in a different way. Just be aware of that and try to figure out, well, what are they conveying in using this? Not what you think that they mean, but what do they mean? And then try to understand. And so a lot of the time when we, you know, we hear like contradictions or different people's teaching different things, usually it's because there's a different context to what they're saying. So, don't get too hung up on the individual words, but try to figure out actually how are they using that those words. Having said which, if you want the right answer, you've come to the right place. only kidding. Mostly. So the way that I would use it. So first of all, I would only really use meditation to mean, you know, the practice of like sitting or walking meditation, like a formal contemplative practice, which could be done theoretically in any posture. So theoretically, yes, you could do swimming meditation. I think you can. But whether that is the same or not, I think it gets a bit semantic. But basically the point about meditation. Okay, so here's the thing about meditation. Right. You come in, you sit down in a particular posture, or you adopt a particular posture for walking meditation or for whatever you're doing, and you demarcate a period of time. You have a place, you have a time, you have a posture, you have a particular purpose or theme that you're undertaking, and you develop that meditation for that period of time. And it has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And that's what meditation is. And when we're developing meditation, you consciously develop it so that each time you sit that or walk, usually sitting and walking are the two main practices, but every time you sit or walk, that you have a beginning, a middle, and an end, and you learn and practice from the beginning to be able to do that, to define your beginning, your middle, and your ending, so that when you begin the meditation, you have a clear purpose set, and that you set beside what you were doing beforehand. You have the clear purpose, you develop that, you maintain it as strongly as you can, and then when it comes to the end, you end it nicely and clearly and completely, like we did in the Metta meditation. You set it down and you leave the meditation behind and you get up and you go about your life. Why do we do that? We do that because you're going to be crying. And you're going to be sad, and you're going to be, mind will be seized by the perception of the impermanence of everything. And you're going to be like lost in confusion, and you're going to be like have dreams, and you're going to have all of these kinds of things that are going to happen to you and everything like that. You're going to be like your body will be riven with nameless feelings that language has not yet grasped, and all of these things will happen to you in your meditation. And if you sit for long enough, all of that stuff will happen, and you have to be able to feel safe to experience all of those things and know that it has an end and you can put it aside when you come to an end. That's why you have a beginning, a middle, and an end. Okay, think about meditation like karaoke. Okay, you get up, you go to, I've never been to a karaoke bar, to be honest, but you go to a karaoke bar, and there's, sorry?
Could be arranged,
right? And like you have a song, right? And then, you know, I'm going to get up there, okay, what is it going to be? Barry Manilow. And you're going to get up there and you're going to sing your little heart out to Barry Manilow about how, but I don't know, Coca Cabana or something. I don't know what Barry Manilow is saying. And in that song, you're going to be standing in front of other human beings, right? Your friends and stuff, warbling your heart out, hitting those high notes, feeling everything, all of that kind of stuff. And you'd never do that normally, right? It'd be so weird. You're not going to do that just sitting in a coffee shop or something like that, or just, right? Why do you do it? Because the song has a beginning, a middle, and an end. Songs are designed to hold emotion like that. That's why you do songs, so that you can experience the emotion through that song has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and you can put it down. That's how art works. So in meditation, it's the same. You feel safe. You can experience all of those feelings because you know that it's going to have an end. This is a really important point about meditation. And so this is why that practice of specifically defining a period of time when you meditate is really important. And, you know, I've talked about like the different kind of chaotic or upsetting feelings you can have. But, of course, the other thing is that you also have very deep experiences of letting go, deep experiences of stillness, experiences where your mind can withdraw from your senses altogether, experiences where you feel this infinite love for all sentient beings, or these experiences when your mind is filled with light and bliss. And those experiences too will come to an end. And when you have those experiences, you know, oh, this is something that's conditioned. It's something that's impermanent. And so you're creating a space where those experiences can happen, and then you can set them aside. Now, when we're creating that space, we're creating like a sandbox, if you like, for the mind to be able to play and do whatever it wants. That doesn't mean that that has no connection with what happens afterwards. Obviously it does, right? And obviously if we are preventing any connection between the meditation and what's happening outside of meditation, then we're just ending up dissociating, which is not good. But that boundary is mediated with mindfulness, so that you know why you're meditating and then how that process goes. For example, simple example, we just did some metta meditation. If you're going around your whole day being angry, yelling at people, getting into arguments and all of that stuff, and you sit down to do metta meditation, well, it's obviously going to affect it, right? So this is why at the beginning of the metta meditation, we do some mindfulness and you check out how it is that you are, yeah? What is your mood? What is your feeling? Okay, then you can begin your meditation. And then at the end of the meditation again, check out how that's changed and how you are. And then you can get up and start. And so you make that interface purposeful and mindful, right? Now, so this is meditation. Mindfulness, as a few of the answers touched on, mindfulness is a quality of the mind, which has to do with maintaining presence of awareness. So, and that idea we had that mindfulness was a adverb and meditation is a verb. There's actually something to that. When the Buddha was teaching mindfulness of breathing meditation, he said, so sato asasati, sato pasasati, mindful, one breathes in, mindful, one breathes out. So the breathing is the action, that's the verb, and the mindfulness is the adverb, right? It's how you breathe. So mindfulness is a quality that you bring to what you're doing, yeah? And it's a quality that you bring in any kind of meditation, and a quality that you also bring outside of meditation. So mindfulness applies in every aspect of our life. And the Buddha said that just as if you put salt in a glass, then every drop of water in that glass will taste of salt. So this is the same thing with mindfulness, is that it's, no, that's not the simile of mindfulness. The simile of mindfulness is just as every dish tastes better with salt in it. I think that's the one, right? Every dish tastes better with salt in it. Presumably, I don't know about bread and butter pudding, but apart from that, most dishes taste better with salt in it, and ice cream. You have like a little bit.
Salt in bread and butter pudding.
You do.
In the butter.
You do put
in ice cream.
So. Okay, fine. Moving on. I apologize. That is 100% my bad. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay. So mindfulness is good everywhere. So you apply mindfulness when you're keeping your precepts. You apply mindfulness when you're speaking. You apply mindfulness when you're doing your work. Of course, you're applying mindfulness in different ways in those different contexts. Huh? And the understanding of how to apply mindfulness in different ways in Buddhism is called sampajanya, or situational awareness. So situational awareness means that we don't pretend that we're meditating when we are doing other things, right? So you leave here, then you're going to be doing what you normally do when you get home. Let's say operating a backhoe, okay? So you're going to be getting on the backhoe, excavating, you know, moving some bricks or something like that. So you're not going to be mindful in the same way that you are here in the retreat, right? You're going to have a different kind of mindfulness, but you still want to be mindful because you don't want to demolish your neighbor's house by mistake, okay? That would be very unmindful. So sampajanya is the understanding that understands context and purpose. Why are we doing this and how are we going to achieve the goal that we're setting out to do it? So this in modern meditation circles, people often talk about mindfulness in daily life. So the phrase that the Buddha used there was sati sampajanya, mindfulness and situational awareness. That's really what he was talking about. So mindfulness is useful everywhere. Mindfulness is good everywhere, but it especially applies during the meditation. So this is where that quality of mind of mindfulness becomes to the fore and becomes like the dominant faculty in leading and supporting us into meditation. So a couple of people mentioned about the role of mindfulness as memory. So this is kind of an interesting semantic thing. So mindfulness, the Pali word sati, or the Sanskrit word smriti, means memory. And before the Buddha came along, all of the references to it just means memory. And there's various scholarly discussions about this with different opinions. Which we're not going to go into now, but basically that's what it is. It means memory. But it's not obvious, like, how does memory relate to meditation? Because in meditation, it doesn't mean memory in the sense that I'm sitting there remembering what happened yesterday. That's not what we mean by memory. So the example that's given before pre-Buddhist meditation, like, how did meditation originate? One of the sources that meditation originated from was from the recital of Vedic hymns. Okay, so before the Buddha came along, there was this class of priests called Brahmins whose sacred duty was to recite Vedic scripture. These are ancient, voluminous collections of poetry and sacred poetry. And it talks about how they would do that. They would finish off their duties in the morning, and then when all their jobs were done, they would retire to a place in the forest, and they would sit in a secluded place in the forest, and then they would call to mind the words of the sacred hymn. And when they called to mind those words, then they would recite them carefully, they would recite them with joy, and they would bring those qualities, like the divine qualities of those words would be brought to mind while they were reciting those words. Yeah. And so you can see that this is starting to approach the Buddhist idea of mindfulness and meditation. Like, it's not exactly the same, but it's not exactly different either. Yeah. And it's a meditative practice. And we can see that that's like one of the practices that evolved to form what we call meditation today. So this is where that idea of memory becomes related to mindfulness and meditation. So in meditation, simply put, mindfulness means remembering what it is that you're doing. You're doing mindfulness of breathing, that means remembering to be aware of the breath. Yeah? And most of us who've done some meditation would be well aware of how easy it is to forget what it is that you're doing. And usually just after a few seconds, then you're off with the fairies, yeah? So just mindfulness, we're training ourselves to maintain in the present that memory of what we are doing, okay? Is that clear? Is that good? Good enough? Excellent. Sorry?
Good question.
Good question, right? Yeah. Okay. Any other questions? Well, obviously I'm the wrong person to ask, right? Because obviously my answer to it was fairly unequivocal. Yeah. Okay. So look, let me just say a few words about that. So you said we're living in a Christian or post-Christian society or whatever. And look, obviously people come from different backgrounds. And, you know, I'm assuming there's probably some people here who are maybe Christian or Christian-ish or Buddhist or Jubu or whatever. And one of the things about Buddhism is we don't really care all that much, right? And so even though, you know, obviously I'm a Buddhist and I frame things from that perspective, but we're not really worried about it. I don't quite know how it works in English politics, but Australian kind of society is kind of interesting that way. Like we don't, like with our politicians and so on, but like we don't care what religion they are. And often we don't even know, actually. Like multiple of our prime ministers have been atheists. Probably, but nobody even bothered asking them.
It's kind of the same
here. Kind of the same here? No one really cares? Yeah, which is how it should be. And it's considered kind of a faux pas to sort of bring it up. Like you can't really ask about that in Parliament and stuff. Some of our prime ministers have been quite strongly religious, but then others have just not, and that's not an issue at all. So, but what you said also is true, that the way we think about things and the way that our values are formed are often shaped by Christianity in ways that we're not necessarily conscious of. I was brought up as a Catholic, and I went. Sorry?
Didn't know.
What about yourself? What were you brought up as? You were brought up as an atheist.
Humanist.
Oh, you're a humanist. Okay. Mm. Yeah. I was brought up like Australian Catholic.
Which means
not very much, actually. Sorry?
Rude. I was going to say it sounded like a contradiction in terms.
Australian Catholic. Not wrong. But I went to a Christian school, went to a Catholic school and that kind of thing. But while I was there, I decided that God didn't exist. So... And I was quite conscious of that at the time. You know, I was obviously kind of quite reflective as a kid, and I remember being aware of that very point, that actually the way that we value things, the way we see things, is really shaped by Christianity. And if that's based on something which I don't believe in, then it's going to affect how we think and what matters to us and what means things to us in all kinds of ways. So I've always tried to be sort of aware of that. And to reflect on it and study it and learn it so that I could sort of understand about those things. So obviously Christianity, like everything else, is a mixed bag, and there are obviously Christian heroes in the world, like the bishop, what's her name, who gave that address, right? Incredible. And the gentleness and grace with which she spoke, the gentleness and grace and meaning with which she spoke took incredible courage. And I think for many people, that's probably their first encounter with a Christian person who actually, like, is good and stuff. She gave the service at Trump's inauguration or something. Yeah, haven't seen it? It's worth listening to it. Yeah, she said she just spoke about mercy and compassion and forgiveness. And so all of the American Christians are now attacking her and trying to destroy her because they've never heard anything so outrageous.
She was following up what Trump said, wasn't he, that God spared me. So she just, you know, because he spared you, then you'll want to be...
Right. All these kinds of concepts like love and forgiveness and so on, which are completely alien. Like they're saying things like mercy is empathy is a sin. Yeah. So this is what they're So this is how far it's gone. Anyway, I don't want to sort of talk about evil too much because there's too much of it around these days and it's really bad. But anyway. But you touched on another issue, is like how we can support that practice. And like one of the things with the Christians is that, yes, they have been You know, they do establish those places and they give those services and they serve their communities. And, you know, I often feel like that when I'm, you know, driving around in Sydney and you go past a church and it'll say like, you know, 8 o'clock Korean service, 9 o'clock simple Chinese service, 10 o'clock English service, 11 o'clock Greek service or something like that. And you go to the Buddhist temples and no, there's nothing. And yeah, I think it's really important for us to be giving that support to each other, which means, number one, we should be appreciative and support those people who are already doing that. Anukampa, Bodhi Tree, right? And there are these organizations around the place that are actually supporting people, and it's awesome. Also, think about what you can do yourself, right? Actually starting a little meditation group, you can do it, right? Bring a few people together, maybe at your workplace, right? There's many places at work where you can do meditation groups. I got a friend in Australia. He worked at the Department of Defence in Canberra, and so he pulled together a meditation group just so people can come and sit in meditation in the thing. So they have to... But what are the potential dangers of this particular activity? He's like, dude, you guys are like driving tanks around and blowing stuff up. And you're asking us about like whether we can sit meditation and what the dangers are. And it was so successful that he just did it informally, but it was so successful that the, you know, his bosses heard about it and they started putting it on as a proper course for the staff at the Department of Defense. In the tax office in Perth, then the tax office in Perth is one of the most popular meditation classes. You have a room like nearly as big as this, crammed full of people who come along to do meditation when one of the monks come. I think the main reason is because meditation is like less boring than tax. So they want to come along and do that. So that's good. So something just to think about, like workplace is one thing. Like in Australia, one of the things I've done for the last few years, I do meditation with the CSIRO, the Commonwealth Scientific Organization. We do a monthly meditation. We've done that for several years now. So there's always opportunities to bring meditation into the workplace, into your neighborhood, your family, your friends, people around you. You don't have to be a meditation teacher. Don't have to be a big guru. Just invite people. Give them a time and space and be able to set something up. So if we can support each other, then I think that's going to be really good. Yeah. Okay, great. Anyone else? What else we got? All right. So what say we do, would you like to do another meditation? We could finish off with one more meditation. What do you reckon? All right. So for this meditation, why don't we just throw caution to the wind? So normally in this particular practice, we do metta for oneself, for a loved person, for a neutral person, for a disliked person, and then for all beings. So what we're going to do, we're going to do oneself, a loved person, and then we'll just go straight to all beings. What do you reckon? Why not? What's the worst that could happen? So, so if you are interested in this practice, and there are some various retreats and various teachings around that I've given for this. And, but otherwise, if you don't like it, that's all right. Don't do it. That's okay. There's a lot of other meditations around.
Can I also say we do an online metta? Online.
Uh-huh.
But I'm real.
You're real, online meta.
At least every 2 Saturdays mornings.
Oh, fantastic. So check out the Anukampa website to find the details for that. Awesome. Okay, let's go. Sorry, I'm checking the time. It's 5 past. Is that right? So sitting quietly and just taking a minute to let your feelings settle down. Let your body settle down. And leaving your mind settle in your heart, say to yourself the words, may I be happy, may I be happy, may I be happy. And continuing those words again and again and again. May I be happy, may I be happy, may I be happy. And as you continue, notice that along with those words of metta, it's also the feeling of metta, that soft, gentle feeling of loving kindness. So warm, glowing, alive. May I be happy. May I be happy. May I be happy. And moving to metta for a loved person. May that loved one be happy. May that loved one be happy. May that loved one be happy. Keeping the mind settled down inside your body. Keeping the feeling of metta even flowing through your body.
And then we're going to take that same metta and spread it out to the whole world. Letting that feeling of metta radiate out from our body. Spreading out over the galaxy, spreading everywhere, filling the whole world with that beautiful, pure loving kindness. May all beings be happy. May all beings be happy. May all beings be happy. Without let or distinction. And now coming near to the end of the meditation, from metta to all beings, back to metta for a loved one. May that loved one be happy. May that loved one be happy. May they be happy. And back to oneself. May I be happy. May I be happy. May I be happy. Letting the words of metta go. Letting the feeling of metta fade away. And allowing the mind to return to a neutral space. Empty, open and clear. When the mind has come back to that neutral space and just everything gone, all of that feeling of metta let go. Before we finish, take a minute to reflect back. What happened? How did it happen? What changed? What was unexpected? What was it like spreading metta to all beings? And finally, we can dedicate the merit of our practice. May all beings be happy. May all beings be well. May all beings realize nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, so I think we've wrapped up for today. Looks like it.
Yes, I thought I'd say a bit about Bodhi tree. If
please, yeah.
I'd like to say a bit about Anicca. Do you want to go first or something? Okay, well, I can stand up so people can hear me. First of all, thank you so much for coming, Dante. We would love to welcome you again next time you're in the country. So.
No worries.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's been awesome. Yeah.
So I'm Jeeva. I'm one of the trustees of Bodhi Tree, as is Sheila and Corky over there. And some of you know, of course, what we do, so I'm not going to talk at great length, but do look up on our website, bodhitreebrighton.org.uk. A couple of people have asked me, what do Bodhi Tree do? Basically, we're an umbrella organisation. We invite teachers from different traditions, some monastic, some lay. So, yeah, we're a kind of umbrella organisation for different approaches to Dharma. We have regular sitting groups, two of which are facilitated by Sheila, and regular day retreats through the year, which pretty much are always here because this is a really cracking venue and very easy to get to, all these things. And yeah, there's a newsletter once a month which I write. It is just about our upcoming events. I hope you can imagine it's not full of loads of irrelevant nonsense. So anyway, do look up our website, bodhitreebrighton.org.uk. And also, we are always looking for ideas. If anyone's thinking, oh, it'd be great if you could do this, or if you feel you can offer help or support in any way, please get in touch. And how you can get in touch is either via our website, or if you booked to come and you had an email from Corky, it's got our address on it, btbsecretary@gmail.com. And like many Dharma organisations, we are supported entirely by Dana. None of us gets paid. We don't get any subsidies or grants. So many thanks if you have donated when you booked online. That money goes for our expenses, like rooms, like website. That's basically it, and insurance. So we also have a bowl over there for any further expressions of generosity, and a bowl for expressions of generosity for the Bante as well. Would that be going to your...
That'll go to sort of central, I think.
Yeah, that's central. So anyway, they're clearly marked there. And thank you for your coming and practice. We all support each other with this. So, yeah, thank you so much. And I hope to see you again at another event or group or something. New faces, old faces, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Sorry? Invite you. Oh, and it would be lovely to hear from Venerable Chandos.
So I'm not inviting myself.
Yes, sorry, I forgot the process.
So I'm very happy that you're here, and it was wonderful to hear the teachings and a lot of fun. And you brought out so many nuances of the Dharma and gave us a lot of food to reflect on, I think. So that was really refreshing. I hope everybody else really enjoyed it. And I can't take credit for today at all. But Bante is coming to stay with us tomorrow. So you're going to come and stay in our new monastery, which is in Oxford, about 5 miles out of the city on a beautiful hill, which is secluded, which is also kind of cozy. It's got this beautiful kind of balance of feeling very spacious, but also protected. And Jeeva's been there. She's an old friend of mine. Yeah. And I have other people staying there with me at the moment. But it's very special because it's the first place in the UK where women have the opportunity to train towards the full ordination as fully ordained female monastics, bhikkhunis. So exactly equivalent to monks who have had this ordination since the time of the Buddha. And so have women. The Buddha actually said in one of the suttas that he won't pass away, he won't attain final nirvana until the fourfold assembly is strong. And that meant the assembly of monks and nons and lay women, lay men, which I feel was an umbrella term for all beings. You know, nobody was excluded there. And that is actually what he made sure happened. You know, there were conditions where everyone could thrive, everyone could practice and have opportunities to, of course, have a safe environment, be well fed, and practice the Dhamma, you know, and have access to teachings. So when we don't have bhikkhunis, there are no female role models for women, who are usually the people who mainly support the monasteries and mainly support the monks, which is wonderful. But the Buddha said that a gift offered to both sanghas, both the bhikkhu and the bhikkhuni sangha, is more valuable, far more valuable, because it spreads the Dhamma further. So what we're doing is quite radical. In a way, you could say it's progressive, but it's actually what the Buddha wanted and what he managed to do 2,600 years ago. So why can't we do it today?
Oh, I'm doing it today.
We are, but it's very early days. And so equally, if people are looking to help build community, looking for more places to practice, then you're very, very welcome to come to our monastery to stay or to offer food to the monastics. Me and one and a half monastics so far. She's half a monastic already, halfway there. And there'll be more visiting monastics as well. So as an organisation, we invite teachers over here, and I also teach a lot in England and online. So you're welcome to come to the teachings. Our little leaflet is over there. And we aim to spread the teachings of early Buddhism and also give women this opportunity to train. So you can come and stay as a guest. You can come to our online programs. You can also volunteer if you wish. If you have some particular skills, could be architectural, could be IT, could be building, could be just you want to clean the kitchen really well for us or something like that. Or take off some of my admin load, which is pretty enormous. That's why I'm retired today. It's very rare that I get to sit on a retreat. So I think, yeah, just really want to encourage you to build community. I mean, we had a lovely conversation at lunchtime, and you were saying, you know, the importance of just meeting one another at these events and really making connections, because, yeah, we can practice in our home, but why do you come here? You know, it's because you have the support of other good people with similar values, hopefully, and you can really encourage one another to keep trying to align your lives to those values. And this is how we create a more beautiful society, a more harmonious and inclusive society. So today this is a little community, and we can keep on creating those communities wherever we go. So yeah, hope to see many of you again. And thank you once again, Bente, and the organizers, and everyone here for your practice today.